Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. This is the day we do Mythbusters, and the co-host is Chris Rossini. Chris, welcome to the program today.
Great to be with you, Dr. Paul.
Good. I understand you have a few things to discuss, dealing with the distribution of wealth and how you have a fairer system. A lot of people are interested in why a few people have so much money and are so wealthy.
Yes, earlier this week, an organization called Oxfam released a report saying that the richest eight people in the world have more wealth than everyone else combined. Now, this is supposed to be a problem, obviously, a problem with always a government solution. So we're going to start off, Dr. Paul, talking about how these individuals got their money. All of them have massively successful businesses, including Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos. But some, and including some of those individuals, are very close to government. So can you describe the difference between cronyism and earning your money in the marketplace?
You know, I think this is key, and we've discussed this over the years about the importance of distinguishing the two, because if it's due to laissez-faire free market capitalism that emphasizes legitimate profits and property rights, the wealth of individuals should be totally irrelevant, even if there are a lot more wealthy people than poor people. But I think it's important because we don't have laissez-faire capitalism. We have crony capitalism. We have a system that is very impure. So, but you have to admit, at least for myself, when you look at that and see the announcement, eight guys that rich? Isn't that obscene? You know, that's an initial emotional response. And you can imagine some who have suffered illegitimately, you know, not because of their own undoing, you know, not taking a job and things. There's a lot of poor people in this world are poor because of a result of bad economic policy, Keynesianism, fascism, welfare, you know, all these things will take away wealth. So you have to say, well, I can understand their frustration. But if you talk to Bernie Sanders, he has a simple solution. Well, they just don't pay enough taxes. Well, maybe they're wealthy, and it is true. They probably don't pay a whole lot of taxes in comparison. I imagine Donald Trump doesn't pay much taxes, and that's one of the reasons we don't know have his tax return. But does that make him, you know, an evil person if he obey the law? But if you know how to work the system and you get to keep more of what you earn, maybe that's one of the reasons they're wealthy. If that is the case, why don't you make that available to everybody? So anybody who has a job and is working and trying to save, why can't they be legally exempted from taxes? This is true when it comes from abatements, when communities want businesses to come to town and say, okay, if you come in, we won't have you pay property and school taxes for 6 years or 10 years. And they get, and that's a deal. And they come in, and there's a tremendous incentive. Well, if that's good for them and good for business, good for the community, why shouldn't everybody be exempt? The problem is government needs too much money, and who's going to pay if you don't tax those individuals? But, you know, there's a lot of resentment. I think the most powerful emotion is that of envy. People see people that are very wealthy and they don't deserve it. Now, you mentioned in your introduction that some of these very wealthy people get pretty close to government. That is not legitimate wealth. And it's really hard to find one person in that group that was pure capitalism, some more so than others. But everybody was exposed to the Federal Reserve. And even if they're critical of the Federal Reserve and they don't endorse the fiat system and maybe even endorse the gold standard, you still have to work with it. It's sort of like you have to work with the post office. That's part of what's happening. But the nature of paper money destroys the middle class and hurts the poor. The money is printed. There's no backing to the currency. The currency has to be distributed. It's usually distributed by paying wealthy corporations money to build more weapons and do more things for the government. Banks are involved. They get the credit. Whoever gets the credit first has a greater value. But the money to do any good has to circulate. So in a way, it's the trickle-down theory. And this trickle-down theory is wrong. It's not trickling down profits as incentives. It's trickling down the value of currency. And by the time the people who are having trouble getting jobs because the government messes up with too much taxes and too much regulation, they end up with a currency losing its value, and they never have enough money. Today, the government tells us there's no inflation. Don't worry about it. But the poor and those on fixed incomes, even those on Social Security, their problem is they don't have enough money. And that means prices are too high. So that is part of the system. And that's why it is unfair the way this works. It wouldn't be this slanted where there would only be eight people containing this much wealth. But there is something I think is fascinating to me that I've read, and I assume it's probably true, is that any economic system you have, whether you have dictatorship, fascism, or communism, or free markets, that there will be a greater amount of wealth gravitating into the hands of the few, and it's usually the 15 to 20% of the population will always have a lot more than the rest. But that's just the way, I guess, the human beings work. So you can see, well, communism is designed to have fairness. Bernie Sanders is a socialist. We got to redistribute this wealth. But it just doesn't work that way. The people who are closer to government, the politicians and the regulators and the people who receive the benefits from government, they always do much better. So it is not easy. There will be, but people have to adjust. Some people do better. If perfect equality in income and perfect equality in everything that we do in life is the goal, and if that is the goal of government, believe me, too often that has interfered with the goal of liberty, because it's the opposite of liberty. But the interesting thing is, if you opt for liberty and you care about fair distribution of wealth, that is the only answer. So what we're seeing today is some people who are capable of making money, even in spite of the government regulations. At the same time, the poor are suffering out of proportion. So I would like to see the benefits passed around, that is sound money, limited government, lower taxes, and give people the incentive to work. And there would be more jobs. But under today's conditions, even the job reports, which someday sounds pretty good, but believe me, there's a lot of people that are unemployed right now. The numbers don't reveal, the numbers the government gives, it doesn't reveal what's really going on. But the one thing for sure, the progressives are absolutely wrong, the socialists are absolutely wrong, because all they want is more authoritarianism. And if we dissect this out, you find out this government authoritarianism and planning and fiat money and the warfare state and the welfare state, that's what we have too much of, and that's why we have half the people who have very little. But they're talking about half the people of the world. So you're talking about many, many impoverished countries, including places like Venezuela, which has, is a basket case. Well, it looks like number-wise, there's probably a lot more countries that are in that condition. So the most important export we could ever give these people would be the understanding of free markets and property rights and contracts. That's what made America the richest country in the world. But right now, since we're attacking those principles, we're becoming a lot poorer. And if you look at the statistics, we're lagging behind. So I think this is a very interesting statistic, and that we should conclude it by saying this should not motivate people to attack free markets and rich people. It should be to sort it out and attack crony capitalism and the special interests which has produced these conditions that are so obviously annoying to a lot of people.
Dr. Paul, you and I learned about this report in the New York Times, which we all know is very supportive of an interventionist government. And other publications also latched onto this because the purpose is not for you to sit and think, all right, I should work on myself, become more valuable to my employer. They want to stir envy so that they can have their government gain more power. So one of those things, obviously, is higher taxes and redistribution of this wealth. Would that work?
Absolutely not. If it's changing it where the market is working, like I just mentioned, that's one thing. But just to say that because people are very, very successful, that we have to tax them. What they forget about is even under today's circumstances, if you look at those eight guys that have all this money, even if they are closer to government, they should be. What are they going to do with their money? I mean, do they take it and put it in a shoebox? No, they're entertained by building big businesses. I mean, they're more delighted with a great business that's successful. How do they do that? They have to invest. They have to hire people. I wonder if somebody would do a study with these eight individuals and find out how many jobs have they created. If you take a company like Google and Facebook and all, they hire thousands and thousands of people. But every one of them contribute. And even if they don't have factories that they run, they have to take the money and they invest it. Somebody might be borrowing that money and building a business from that. So you just can't say, well, they have all the capital and they haven't done any good. I think it'd be fascinating to find out how many jobs they actually created. And lo and behold, one of the answers to some of the inequities of free markets, even though that's the best system for distribution of wealth, is charitable donations, which has been around for a long time. This country is one of the most charitable. Now, I know there are some libertarians that say, oh, no, we don't need that. That's okay. You don't even have to say you have to be charitable. But a wealthy nation will be charitable, and some will be more inclined. And you take some of these people, they have trouble figuring out how to get rid of their money. And they're charitable, and they try to do, and they work on trying to do good things. But I wish they'd just spend more money bringing people here and teach them free market economics and why the government system has caused these problems. They don't do so much of that. We don't see a group like that come rushing to support libertarian groups. That's a little bit too much. We have to have a bit of government, and you guys don't want hardly any government. And besides, we have to have this military and all those arguments. But the whole thing is just to say that they make all the money and they're a crony capitalism. We need to tax them. We need to take it away from them and ignore the positive sides of this because in a free society, what you want to do is measure the people's success. And the judge of that success should be the consumer. Everything that a businessman does should be designed to satisfy consumers. And when consumers go to the marketplace, they get to vote. Now, you talk about democracy. This is the part of the democracy that I want, is that every single penny, now it has to be every single $10 you spend because a penny doesn't buy much. Every single cent the consumer spends is a vote on a product. And that's why you don't want government subsidizing. Let's say the consumer picks one company and they won't buy American cars. Well, that's an indication American people ought to make better cars. You don't subsidize them and protect these industries, but the consumer should be able to tell people what's going on. And if you get wealthy by satisfying the consumer, if you can sell a lot of cell phones and you've had no government interference and they get wealthy doing this, how many jobs have they created? How much good have you done by giving people a cell phone at a good price? Why do poor people have cell phones? It's not because we have a government distribution programs of cell phones. Say, every kid ought to have a cell phone. He'll be safer that way. No, it just takes care of itself. People don't understand this. They give up on it. And for all kinds of reasons, they just despise, voluntarism, believing people can't and won't do it and not realizing that, that's true. There are some that won't. But why put them in government and let them make all the bad decisions for all of us? That's the worst system you can have. But the worst thing to do would be just to say, we're envious of these people. The solution is raise taxes. And, even the inheritance tax does the same thing. That's destruction of capital, passing on capital and businesses. And that is very negative for taking care of poor people because it is the marketplace that will take care of the poor people the best.
Next, we're going to talk about an idea that's always floating on the left. And it's still a fringe idea, but they're waiting for enough people to be seduced by it. And this report may help push in that direction. That's called a universal basic income, which means that everyone in America, just for being alive, gets an income check from the government. What do you think about this idea, Dr. Paul?
Well, I bet you could guess what I think. I think it's a terrible idea, but it's humanitarian. It's well-intentioned, and everybody has good intentions about this. But it doesn't work. It means that if that special benefit, if that income comes anywhere close to the lowest paid job, people quit working. And that's why people aren't in the workforce. Part of the reason they just aren't there is so there's no incentive. So if you can make $1,000 a week on welfare and somebody offers you a job at $1,100 a week, why would they take it for, why would they go to work for $100 a week? So no, it destroys the incentive. And besides, you don't know about it. And besides, it breeds, and then it becomes you can't finance it. And that's why socialism always fails. That's why the Soviet system failed. Yes, everybody should have a fair income. But if they care about that, the big problem with our argument is, you mean people would always have to work for an income? You know, that's the case. You would always have to work. Well, some people can't produce very much. Well, that is true, too. So they have to work very hard, and they have to work on it and solve their problems through volunteerism. But not with this authoritarianism, with a government coming in and saying they know what the fair wage is and what it has to be. That destroys the market. And if they want a lot more poor people, just keep doing that. But it won't work.
Finally, Dr. Paul, we're doing this broadcast as the new president is being inaugurated, and it's going to apply to this new administration. But we're going to talk about the ideas of the old English philosopher Thomas Hobbes. And he claimed, and it caught on, this idea that without a Leviathan state, everyone would be at war with everyone else, and that life would be solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. Dr. Paul, why is liberty preferable to this Hobbesian idea of a Leviathan state?
You know, that is so absurd. You think, who would believe that? But a lot of people do. A lot of people in this country believe it. A lot of people still say, Ron, don't you know how the Depression ended? The war did that. So you have to do this. But they claim that their argument is that if you didn't have government, you would have more war. And my argument is 100% office. Opposite of this, I believe that if you didn't have government, or if you had very small government, let's have an executive branch of government like they have in Switzerland. You know, very, very weak. And they don't send military outside their borders, and they've had a couple hundred years and they haven't been in war. So the stronger the government is, the more likely it is that you're going to have a war. So Hitler had a strong army and a strong government, as is communism. But this whole idea that a strong government is necessary, and that if you allow the people, no, I think that there's good examples in the Middle East in particular, when there was less of this authoritarianism, that a lot of communities that had Christians and Jews and Muslims living peacefully together. But when these very powerful people came in from the outside, they destroyed that culture. So Hobbes was wrong. Even though most people would say, oh, well, that's old-fashioned. No, there's a lot of people that still believe that. They believe in military Keynesianism, that it's good for jobs and all the rest, and that you will more likely have peace because if you don't have a defense, people are going to invade you. No, it was well written during the Second World War that a major general, I think in either Germany or Japan, said, no, we would never invade the United States physically because everybody there has a gun. And that's what would happen, and that's sort of what happens in Switzerland. Every household is armed. So, no, exactly the opposite. Strong governments. And it reminds me, and I'll close with this, of the story I wrote about in one of my books, was that when I was confused about, as a 10-year-old, why we were fighting some of our family members who still live in Germany, I asked my grandmother, and she says, well, the people don't want war. It's the governments. And that little statement, which I remembered as a 10-year-old, is true, and Hobbes is wrong. Chris, I want to thank you today for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Very good. And I want to thank our audience for being with us today. And please come back soon to the Ron Paul Liberty Report.